Today, you get to meet Caroline, an executive recruiter who joined the business in the toughest possible year, 2010.
The market was in complete turmoil. The economy was in full recession mode. So every single call I was making, I was calling on HR managers, calling on line managers, calling on executives, and they were yelling at me, hanging up on me, cussing me out because they did not want to talk about hiring and recruiting because they were having to lay everyone off.
From bearing the brunt of a candidate's personal problems to managing dress code violations, Caroline sees recruiting as an exceptionally human job.
You're working in the people business, and so it's not a product like a bottle of wine or a cup or a plate. This thing that you're working with talks back.
Hi, I'm Michelle Aronson, and welcome to True Stories at Work, where we discuss the best things about working in human resources, the people, the stories, and the things that happen at work that we didn't even know about. Workplace confessions. I'm a recovering HR executive, certified coach, and business school professor who knows that the best stories happen at work. From heartbreaking to heartwarming, from hilarious to outrageous. Now, I help companies develop impactful people strategies and make great cultures. Today, we'll dive deeper into the liaison between HR and job candidates, the recruiters. We'll hear about how many candidates don't understand how to work with recruiters and how the power dynamic is always shifting between the company and the candidate. And you can learn how to negotiate yourself a private jet.
As a female in executive seat, and the options of comp benefits don't have to just be black or white, you know, with the base salary plus commissions or stock options or whatnot. You can get creative and negotiate in the jet.
And at the end, you'll hear a workplace confession. So let's get started. Caroline, welcome to the show. So glad to have you here as my guest.
Thank you so much for having me, Michelle.
I would love to know a little bit more about you. Can we go way back and maybe you can tell me where you're from and what that was like?
Sure. So I'm originally from the Charlotte, North Carolina area. I went to college at the University of South Carolina, and I stayed and worked in Columbia for close to 16 years. That's actually where I got my recruiting start. And 4 years ago, my husband and I, we moved down to the coast of South Carolina. So I currently live in Beaufort, South Carolina, which is right in between Savannah and Charleston.
It sounds beautiful. What's the best part about Beaufort?
We spend so much time outdoors. We are on the boat. We are outside walking, eating at restaurants on the patio, overlooking the water. It's just a whole, everything that you see on magazines or on the television about low country living is true.
It sounds wonderful. I've been there. I have friends that live down there, and it is gorgeous, really gorgeous. You mentioned that you went to college and that you became a recruiter. When you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a vet. I love animals. I grew up riding horses and having a dog at the house, a family pet. And my husband and I currently have two Weinreiner females named Zena and Zara, and they are our little fur babies. So I never thought I would get into recruiting or HR.
So how did that happen?
So in 2010, I was looking for a job as a candidate, and I applied to a position that I thought was in marketing because I had a degree in public relations and business. And so I went into the recruiting agency's office thinking I was applying and interviewing for a marketing job. And they said, why don't you come work for us? So I had no idea what staffing and recruiting was. I thought it would be a great opportunity to partner with businesses to help them find the right candidates for the right seats and find top talent for them so that they can continue growing their companies. But if you don't remember 2010, the market was in complete turmoil. The economy was in full recession mode. So every single call I was making, I was calling on HR managers, calling on line managers, calling on executives, and they were yelling at me, hanging up on me, cussing me out because they did not want to talk about hiring and recruiting because they were having to lay everyone off.
So why'd you stay?
So my first 30 days, I made a placement, a temporary placement, and the rest is history. So most recently, so when I started in recruiting, I worked placing temporary employees. And then 15 years later, I have only worked in the C-suite space. So working with Fortune 500 companies, private equity, small, medium-sized businesses, working with their strategic hires in the C-suite.
I also started in temporary staffing. That is such a training ground for recruiting because, at least in Chicago, it was super high volume. I would just interview every 30 minutes, I mean, all day long. Do you have any stories that are memorable from your temporary staffing days?
If you can work in temporary staffing for a year, then you have chops. I don't care what you're placing temporarily. It is a huge churn and burn game. And you're right. I mean, I was interviewing 8 to 9 people a day, and I would staff up companies. Like, they would hire large call centers and hire 50 to 100 people. I had an insurance company I staffed in Columbia, and a storm would hit in Florida and they would need 200 people immediately. And as a recruiter, you would be expected to deliver those people to work there immediately. So it was a good experience. A lot of good memories from temporary staffing, especially when you take someone who's job searching, looking for a new opportunity and not having the best of luck, and you call them and it's a perfect fit for your client and your candidate, and you provide them an opportunity to grow professionally and to change their lives and their family's lives from a monetary standpoint. I mean, to get those calls, I mean, I'd have candidates crying, you know, around Christmas, especially when you would get them a job. It just was a game changer when it came to providing for their families.
It can be very rewarding. It really can. And you're really giving them help in a way that can help them forever, like getting them on their track to their dream job. What about some of the challenges? What are some of the weird things that happened with your candidates?
Oh, yes. It was a weekly, if not daily, escapade. And the reason is because you're working in the people business. And so it's not a product like a bottle of wine or a cup or a plate. This thing that you're working with talks back. And they have emotions and bad days and good days and family situations and car situations and you name it, you hear about it. Especially as the recruiter, because a lot of times the candidates feel comfortable talking to you when they wouldn't tell the hiring manager or HR exactly what they got going on in their lives. And so you got to really be more of a confidant to them and an advocate for them, not only to find them a new opportunity, but to help them navigate through some of those situations that are tough. I was working for a firm in Charlotte at one point, and we were hiring a very high volume of call center reps for a large commercial real estate company, and they were project-based. So it was very up and down as far as the volume that we would have to deal with. And a lot of times we have to go on site and deal with things directly with the temporary employees as far as disciplinary actions, because technically we were the employer, not the client they were actually working at. So I remember one time I got a call. It was right around Christmas time. And the hiring manager said, you need to come and speak with your candidate. They are causing a lot of distraction in the workplace. And of course I said, okay, sure, I'll be there, you know, within an hour. And so I got there and I found out that my candidate had shown up with see-through white leggings and no top covering her legging situation. So I had to take her to the restroom and explain to her that she needed to go home and find something else to wear that was preferably a darker color or had a long dress or top before she could return to work. And of course, she was upset. She was going to miss a couple hours of pay because of that. But it was an interesting scenario, especially dealing with dress code. I mean, it was causing a lot of issue in the workplace.
How did she react other than the being annoyed?
It was... It was a series of emotion. And I think at first it was a shock, you know. Then it was a get defensive, as in I'm not distracting anybody or no one's looking at me. And then it was a let me process this and just go home for 2 hours, you know, get there back, come back with something different to wear and move on.
There's always a dress code something or other. What's the greatest challenge you had to deal with at work? What was your biggest struggle?
As a recruiter, I think it's important to keep the whole picture in mind. So when you're working with a candidate or a job seeker looking for a new opportunity, most of the time you need to consider, and they have to consider, other things than themselves. So for example, can they move or not? Did they have kids, young kids, teenagers, maybe that can't, you know, move to a new state for a new opportunity because they're about to go to college or, you know, they're about to enter elementary school. And then two, you have to consider too, whether or not this person has a significant other, because that matters too, you know, as far as income or availability and flexibility. And so those are things you need to keep in mind, obviously, when recruiting, is that you need to really have a relationship with who you're working with and really understand the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm. Do you have an example of where you had to walk somebody through that?
I'm going to tell you a story about someone I really admire that I placed last year, and how she negotiated her deal, I mean, is goals for all the things, and especially for females in business, okay? So number one, she wasn't really looking for a job. So I messaged her and I pursued her pretty hard. There's an exact science as to how you communicate with people, especially at the executive level. And this was an executive role for a Fortune 500 company, so really big job. So this individual, she was not looking for a job. I heavily pursued her. There's a fine line of how the dance, you know, how often you contact them, because you can't contact them all the time, because then you're like a stalker. But then if you can't contact them a little amount of time, because you won't grab their attention. So I got her attention. She had been a company in executive seat for over 20 years. Immediately within 2 minutes, I knew she was the one. So it was a retainer search I was working. I presented her within a slate to the executive board. And they decided to meet with all five of the candidates. And I knew still in the back of my mind, she was the one. So we got to the final end of the process. She gets the offer. Now she's an executive seat with a big Fortune 500 publicly traded company. So she's got a big package on the line here. They offered her close to $100,000 on a base, more than what she wanted for her job. They agreed to pay for corporate housing for her. She even negotiated the corporate jet because her husband was living at their primary residence in Alabama. I mean, you want to talk about goals? She knew that they had 8 corporate jets and she negotiated in airtime on top of her increased base, on top of her stock options. And so she just was an inspiration to me as to what you can actually accomplish as a female in executive seat, and the options of comp benefits don't have to just be black or white, you know, with the base salary plus commissions or stock options or whatnot. You can get creative and negotiate in the jet.
I like that. I'm going to do that in my next job, negotiate in the jet. Let me ask you, because that's a great story, and I love those stories. Does it ever go wrong?
I am all for asking. You never, ever should accept the first thing that you're offered, ever. You should always go back and negotiate. Now, there is a point where you are getting greedy or asking for too much. And so figuring out that cadence and dance is really important. And especially if you're working with a recruiter, you can push harder on your recruiter and your recruiter can be the barrier, the middleman there. It's harder to do if you don't have a recruiter in between, but you still need to be asking for more. The worst thing they're going to do is say no. I've only had one scenario one time where the person asked more than once and pushed too far and the company said, we're done. And so the offer was rescinded. But that's only happened one time in 15 years.
Yeah. I mean, in my experience, usually there's something to be done. Like, what is your top 2 tips for what to ask?
I would negotiate 2 things. I would negotiate the money and then something else. So, for example, we can negotiate either a higher base pay or a higher bonus percentage or commission percentage. Those are two options right there. When we're talking about negotiating on a higher scale that's not talking about money, some things that we can negotiate that I've seen are PTO. You can always negotiate PTO. And especially if you're leaving a place that you have, let's say, 4 weeks PTO and your new company only offers 2 weeks PTO, negotiate an extra week or see if they can match what you're currently getting. I have never, ever in my 15 years, had a company say that they can't match or at least negotiate PTO. Some other things you can negotiate in that are related to money are car allowance. You can negotiate sometimes different percentages on 401ks. That's more rare than the other two. Sometimes you can negotiate stipends to pursue higher education opportunities. You can negotiate in daycare or childcare assistance or additional stipend to help with that. Or mileage. If you're having to commute in or travel on behalf of a company, and let's say they are offering the standard or something less than standard, you can always negotiate that in too.
Yeah, that's great advice. And you've done it a lot, but I know whenever I discuss this with people, they're scared. But it's about finding your voice and asking for what you need. And the worst case scenario, except for in that one scenario, is they'll just say no. And then you know that you're getting the best, the greatest offer. Tell me, in your working in HR, what has shocked you the most? Tell me a surprising or shocking story about your years in HR.
One thing that shocked me the most and that I see changing now is when I started in recruiting, and probably even for the first 10 or 15 years, the landscape was different. And what that means is the employers held all the cards. And the vibe was, okay, we have the job and the candidate wants to work for us, so we have all the power and we call all the shots. Now in 2024, Gen Z is taking up over 30% of the workforce. The gig economy is here. People have side hustles. They're online making money. They're on TikTok, OnlyFans, Instagram, whatever. They're doing e-commerce stuff on Amazon. They have other avenues of income coming in. So they're not solely relying on one income stream. And number three, I see candidates, even passive job seekers, they're not tolerating companies that have these, you know, 7 or 10 round interview processes, or, hey, let's interview four times and let me have you take a 4-hour test, or, hey, let me have you do an assessment before you even speak to anybody. They're not putting up with that anymore.
So what are they? What is the solution? What's the right answer?
Companies need to be more progressive with their recruiting strategies and tactics. They need to use multiple different avenues to recruit candidates. I think posting a job out there isn't cutting it anymore, because you're not, number one, tapping into passive job seekers. Number two, there's a lot of people that you're not tapping into that you can use on social media, whether it be LinkedIn or Facebook or Instagram or TikTok. Those people are hanging out on those platforms and they're seeing content, consuming content. And so if they're seeing what you're doing, what you're putting out there, you know, recognizing employees, how you're giving back to the community, they're watching your company and they will see whether or not when you have openings come up, and you'll be able to attract them faster because they'll already know who you are.
Yeah, that's good advice. What's your biggest workplace pet peeve?
Not receiving feedback in a timely manner.
So what does it look like to get feedback?
So feedback is so important, and timely feedback is so important. I can't tell you how many times I've worked with companies and they'll engage me. We'll go and do the meeting, do the intake. I'll have a good understanding of what they're looking for. I'll go out to the market. I'll find what they're looking for. I'll provide them one or a couple of candidates that fit exactly what they're looking for. And then I send them to the hiring manager and it sits in their inbox for 2 weeks. And so now the candidate that I got all excited about your opportunity has not had an update or next step from me or you for 2 weeks. It's like dating. It's like you go on a first date and you have a great time and then you don't hear back for 2 weeks from that person. Well, that doesn't really feel good. It's not a good way to get started. And then if you want to attract and engage top talent, they're going to be gone finding a new opportunity, because if you think they're only interviewing with you or interested in working for your company, you're a fool.
Mm-hmm. And even if they are, why would they want to work for a company that doesn't call them back for 2 weeks, that doesn't take the time to move the process forward? All of those actions and inactions early on very much tell candidates who you are. Recruiting is hard. Like, I started out as a recruiter, so I appreciate how hard all the things that you've mentioned, sourcing people and placing people and working with companies. And it's really, there's so much intention and work behind that. Anything that I did not ask that you would like to share?
I would like to share that when you're working with a recruiter, make sure to always treat them as a professional and be kind to them, because, again, they're on your side. A lot of times people think that recruiters work for them. And at the end of the day, the recruiters actually work for the clients and the companies that have hired them. And so, yes, they are on your team. They are here to be your advocate. They don't work for you. And so keep that in mind when you're working with them as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is true. All right. So then, thank you for being my guest today. It was great to have you. And thanks for all the wisdom and all the great stories. So thanks for your time.
Thanks, Michelle.
We've all done something bad at work, but here's your chance to confess. From small wrongs like borrowing office supplies to simplify your back-to-school shopping or snacking on a coworker's lunch, to the major workplace sins, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll type. Here is today's Conscious Clearing Confession.
There was a time in my life when I wasn't so mature. And to be honest, it wasn't that long ago. I live in Chicago and went out to my car at the end of the day. I was parked in front of the building where my office was. And there was probably 4 or so inches of snow all over my car. And as I'm starting to scrape it off the car, I got this really great idea, because my boss was in the office still. It was probably 5:30. It was dark. It was the winter. And I remember pulling out my little purple Nokia, not even a flip phone, and looking up his number. I probably had to type it into the number pad. And I said, "Oh my God, you have to come out here right away. I need your help." And I thought he would think I was stuck, which was the plan. I also knew he would come out completely unprepared for what awaited him. While I was waiting for him to get outside, I made maybe 25 snowballs. They were the perfect packing snow. It was light but firm. It was just wet enough to hold a snowball together. And I stacked them all up on the hood of my car. And when my boss came out, I just started pelting him with snowballs, and I expected an immediate retreat. I didn't get one. He, in his dress shoes and work shirt and suit pants, started picking up snow with his bare hands and pelting it back at me. And when I ran out of snowballs, I just got in my car and drove away.
Now clear your conscience by submitting your workplace confession at physicsatwork.com/podcast.
Thanks for listening to the show. If you work in HR and have a story to share, please visit my website, physicsatwork.com/podcast. Stories are what people remember and how we connect, so please share yours with me. Thanks. Haiku for Caroline. Caroline asks for the benefits and money and the private jet.